This podcast is presented by Regions Bank. You're chasing your goals, and it's up to you how you want to get there. Let Regions Bank coach you with financial tips that fit your everyday grind. Visit regions.com/next-step to learn more. Regions, member FDIC.
Hello and welcome to the AP Top 25 College Football Podcast. I'm Ralph Russo, college football writer with the Associated Press. On this week's show, we're going to have a little fun with three big guys. My guests are three former major college football offensive linemen, all played at big-time schools. Aaron Taylor, now with CBS Sports, played at Notre Dame from 1990 to 1993. He was an All-American. He was a first-round draft pick. He won a Super Bowl with the Green Bay Packers. Cole Kubelik, now with ESPN and the SEC Network, played at Auburn from 1996 to 2001 and was a starter for 3 years at guard. Jeff Schwartz, now with SiriusXM, played for Oregon from 2004 to 2007. Then he spent 8 seasons in the NFL. So all very accomplished players who competed with and against elite athletes. I asked the three of them to come on individually and to share their welcome to the big time stories. It's one of my favorite things to ask athletes, a simple question that often produces some really fun stories. Tell me about the time or times, maybe in college, the pros, or even high school, when you found yourself thinking, oh boy, this is a different world from what I am used to. Little programming note, this episode was recorded a week in advance of its publication. As you listen to this, I am likely somewhere in the mountains out west. So if you're wondering why we're not covering the big news of the week or further developments in what has been one of the most eventful off seasons I can remember, that's why. I hope you enjoy the show anyway. Thanks for listening to the AP Top 25 College Football Podcast. You can find us on Westwood One Podcast, Apple Podcast, just about anywhere you get your podcast. Please subscribe, and if so inclined, give us a good review. It helps college football fans find us, and it helps us find more college football fans. And away we go. Joining me first on the podcast is Aaron Taylor. Aaron is a former Notre Dame offensive lineman, a future College Football Hall of Famer. We're crossing our fingers there for you, Aaron. Thank you. Super Bowl champion, first-round draft pick. Aaron had an amazing football career. Hey, man, thanks so much for doing this with me today.
I appreciate it, Ralph. It's always good to talk about all the humble pie I've eaten over the years.
Well, and just so you, Aaron, you will also hear Aaron on CBS Sports and see his handsome face on CBS Sports talking about college football. But yeah, we're bringing Aaron in here and the other guys, Cole Kubelik and Jeff Schwartz, to talk about moments when maybe they weren't the best on the field, or maybe when their confidence was shaken a little bit. So, very easy question for you, Aaron, and you can take me. I know there might be more than one of these stories, so you can go high school, college, pro. Give me maybe a, when I say you're welcome to the big time moment where you kind of felt like, wow, like everything I learned or everything I thought I knew before about this game of football, I may have to adjust my thinking. Where are some of your thoughts go?
That first padded practice at Notre Dame certainly didn't go well for me. The freshmen showed up early in 1990, and my first non-padded rep was against 49er Hall of Famer and future NFL Hall of Famer Bryant Young, who had a tremendous college career and probably be in the College Hall of Fame here shortly as well. But then when the vets showed up, there was this dude, number 50, and number 50 had arms like legs and legs like people. Now you got to understand, Ralph, I was a high school All-American, the first ever USA Today high school All-American football team I was a member of, basically leaning on and assaulting guys about half my weight in college and being able to get, you know, away with murder because I was so much bigger than everybody else. Well, that suddenly changed when I went against number 50. And no matter what I did, pass or run, I was getting ragdolled. He would throw me to the ground. I would come off the ball on a run as hard as I could, and he would ole me, and I would end up with a face full of dirt. There was nothing I could seemingly do to block this guy. So a couple nights in the camp, I remember going home to my dorm, calling my mom and crying on the phone and saying, "Mom, I can't play at this level. They got this guy, number 50. He's ragdolling me. I'm doing my best, and it's just not good enough." I said, "Calm down, baby. Remember, blah, 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 blah." She talked me off the ledge. Well, turns out that number 50 was Chris Zorich, the College Football Hall of Famer. Ended up winning the Lombardi Award that year as the best interior defensive lineman, ORD lineman, in the country. But that was my rude awakening to this is a different speed than I'm used to. And on top of all that, I think what should have been my first hint is that the dude had a mustache. And who had mustaches back then? Chris Zorich did, and he also had big pipes, and he used them to kick my ass.
The interesting thing about Zorich, though, he wasn't necessarily, like you talked about his legs and his arms, but he was a little under, like, quote unquote, I always use this, my wife always laughs when I say undersized football players, but he wasn't the tallest or biggest guy physically. Like his overall stature wasn't huge. You were probably like a couple of inches taller than him, weren't you?
I was, and what you're talking about is length, and he certainly didn't have the prototypical length, and as offensive defensive lineman, that's really important as leverage comes into play and being able to keep guys away from you and create separation. But once he got into you, it was lights out. Because he was shorter, he played with tremendous pad level. Because he was shorter, he was built like a bulldog. He was tremendously explosive in small areas, and that's how he made his hay. He used quickness and strength at the point of attack, that twitch, to be able to cause a lot of havoc for a lot of people other than just myself.
He was an amazing, amazing player. So now you get past Zorich. Well, did you remember a point when you managed to sort of get to a point against Zorich where you thought, all right, I can handle this guy. I think I can handle this guy. You know, how deep into it, whether it was spring, preseason practice, the season, where you realize, okay, like, I think I can handle this guy enough so that I belong here?
Well, I tell you what, it never happened my freshman year, but it happened. It happened my rookie year when I got drafted to Green Bay and he was playing for the Bears. I more than made up for it. Now, I'll add this, that it took me 3 years to do, but I also won the Lombardi, so I figured some things out as well. But Chris is a great dude, but that lack of length, I think, probably really put a ceiling on his career in the NFL, because every inch, every strength, every bit of physical characteristic and ability matters on the next level. And he was a hell of a college player, but that lack of length, I think, hurt him in the end on the next level.
Yeah, and I imagine, again, and you alluded to this, the idea that when you do go against that guy, the first time, it sounds like it was the first time you really faced adversity on a football field, right? You really actually went against somebody who you couldn't beat. That has to make you, if you're a good player and you turned out to be a great player, that has to be a moment where you really examine your game more than ever before. And you have to learn, okay, how do I work around this? Where are my weaknesses, places I need to get better?
Yeah, well, that's not hard to do when you got Coach Joe Moore screaming in your ear and Holt saying, "Aaron Taylor, you make me never want to recruit California again. Get out of my drill." Like, there's a lot of negative reinforcement to get you to find a way to shake those things off and get back to fundamentals and basics. But we all, as offensive linemen, have that come-to-Jesus moment where there's a creature across the line of scrimmage from you that just simply brings skills and a tool set to the table that you don't have, which means you have to be precise with your steps, with your punch, with your pad level, with your base, your angles. All of those things have to be spot on, because I tell you what, you get to the next level and you're brocking a Reggie White could give a damn about your technique or your punch, because he was going to hump move you and get to the quarterback no matter what you did.
Yeah, and okay, so I'll leave it at this, because I had to bring it to the next level. So you get drafted by the Green Bay Packers, and you were in 1994, and I think that's when Reggie White first got there, or am I off on
he
that
was there
a little
a couple
bit?
Years before I got there.
Okay, so now, I don't know if you had a Zorich-type moment with Reggie White, but at some point it was like, okay, hey, Rook, go block that guy.
Oh, it was Gilbert Brown. It was Sean Jones. It was Santana Dotson. We had some pretty damn good three techniques and defensive ends and nose tackles. That front seven that we had was tremendous. But I'll tell you this, I gave up more pressures in our first mini camp in Green Bay in April, immediately after the draft, than I did my entire junior or senior year. Dudes that weren't even going to make the team had twitch, had moves, had a good pass rush plan, and you had to be at your best. So even then, every jump that you make up in level, high school to college, college to the NFL, there's a learning curve. Now, the guys that are, you know, excessively talented smooth that curve out pretty quickly, but there's always an adjustment to the speed. I could not run at junior Seau on an outside zone at the same angle I could against college kids. I'd be 6 yards behind them. I basically had to pull and go flat to give myself a chance to nick him so that the running back could go by. And that's the difference. When they talk about football as a game of inches, it's those inches that they're talking about.
So I imagine by 1994, you're a man, you're a first-round draft pick. That first couple of rough weeks of minicamp weren't followed by calls to your mom saying, I don't think I can do this, right? You may have wanted to do that, but I'm guessing here, Aaron, you didn't do that.
That's a very astute observation, Ralph. I may have wanted to, but I didn't at that point. I got hurt, actually, my rookie year, so there might have been some calls of a different nature at that point. But that was the difference. In college, I faced big dudes that were strong or undersized guys like Zorch that were quick. In the NFL, they got together, made a baby, and you had big, strong dudes that were cat quick. So it was the Warren Sapps. It was the John Randalls. It was the Leon Letts. Those were the guys that I saw twice a year in our division that made our lives as offensive linemen not the most fun.
Here's the last thing I wanted to ask, Aaron, because again, your career was probably, I would say, this is fair, it was cut a little short. You only played until 1999 because you had, it was knees and back you had, or just knee?
It was everything. Any sort of connective joint that involved tissue, I was out.
Well, that's the game you chose. So, but I'm one because your career wasn't that long. But I do wonder: did you at any point reach that transition period where maybe your skills were diminished a little bit, but you were able, because you had a lot of experience, and again, you know, not necessarily technique, but you sort of understood the game in a way that you were able to sort of make up for some of the diminished skills? Because I imagine there's a point in your career, that like peak point, when you still have the great skills, but you're also starting to master the game. And I'm wondering, because your career was cut short, did you feel like you got to that point?
Well, that's a great question, actually, because my entire career in the NFL was based upon the fact that I was such a good fundamental technician. I didn't have the strength. I didn't have the mobility in my ankles, knees, and hips after the two ruptured patella tendons to be able to bend and move like I did, you know, to justify Green Bay trading up 4 spots to draft me in the first round. So I had to be precise with my punch. I had to be great with my feet. So it became the law of diminishing returns, and I remember distinctly my last year in the NFL, 1999, I was with the Chargers. We played Green Bay, and I remember being in my stance, knowing exactly what the three technique was going to do. The ball gets snapped. I go to pass set. He does exactly what I think he's going to do, which is rip inside, and I watched him go inside with my head, and then about a second and a half later, my body went to react to that movement, and it was a pressure. I didn't give up a sack, but I remember getting back to the huddle and thinking, holy smokes, I'm on borrowed time here. There's no way that I can continue to perform and do what I need to do at this level if I'm anticipating things, but my body simply won't allow me to do what I know what's coming.
Well, again, Aaron Terrell had a great college career. He had a damn good NFL career that I'm sure a lot of people would envy, winning a Super Bowl with the Green Bay Packers. Aaron, I knew you'd be perfect for this because as great of a player as you are, I also know you don't mind sharing stories about being humbled. You're a humble guy. You're fun to watch on TV. I really appreciate you sharing some of these stories with me today. And hopefully, if the world gets back to some type of order, we will actually see each other, maybe at a press box or something like that, in the not-so-distant future.
I look forward to it, Ralph, and you bank it, man. College football is going to start on Labor Day.
From your lips to God's ears, Aaron, thank you so much for doing this today.
All right, brother.
Joining me next on the podcast is Cole Kubelik. You can hear him on and see him on the SEC Network, sometimes on ESPN, sometimes on, if you live in the state of Alabama or near it, WJOX, right? Is three-man front middays, Cole? Am I getting that right?
That's it. Yep, jocksfm.com, even if you don't live in Alabama. So you can listen anywhere, 10 to 2.
Yeah, Cole is one of the hardest working guys in show business right now, not to mention the fact that he's also not a new father. He's a father again for the third time, a 3-year-old, a 9-year-old, and now a 2-month-old. Congratulations on that, Cole, and God bless you.
Yeah, it's been fun. Obviously, having a baby during the pandemic was not ideal. But we got through it. Much better situation than we probably imagined going in. And to just complicate it further, my wife had reconstructive ankle surgery 2 weeks ago, and the 3-year-old and 5-year-old are with me solo during the week for the next month. So it's going to be exciting.
Yeah, very exciting. I'm sorry, yeah, 3-year-old, 5-year-old, not 3 and 9. I let you off easy there. 9 would have been easier.
Yeah, I'd have some help. We'd be good.
All right, so we're going to do with you what I just did with Aaron Taylor, one of your buddies from the Joe Moore Award panel, and another fellow offensive lineman. I realized as I was doing this, I was looking for former athletes to do this fun podcast with, and I ended up with 3 offensive linemen, and I think I had 2 or 3 others who were offensive linemen. I realized that it seems like my circle. I'm 5'10", 185. I am not 185. I used to be 185. I'm probably 170 now. I am certainly not an offensive lineman, but I seem to have surrounded myself with them. But that's okay. I'm glad to be friends with the big guys because they'll always keep me safe. So now, Cole, you know Cole from his media career. Cole was a pretty damn good football player, too. Cole played for Auburn from 1996 to 2000 and was a 3-year starter on some damn good teams. So when I bring in Cole, at least we know him from TV, he was a damn good player. But I'll ask you the same question that I asked Aaron is, do you remember, and it could be any level of football, your sort of welcome to the big time moment, that moment when you thought to yourself, this is not like anything I have ever done before?
I mean, I think for us bigger guys, that moment probably comes a little bit later. I can remember a couple of them from college, but I can remember being a sophomore at Homewood High School. We had an offensive lineman named John Whidden that went and played at Jacksonville State, and his best friend was a guy named Kip Cowan. They played guard and tackle on the same side of the offensive line. And they throw me in scout team sophomore year. It's just new guys, get them out there. And I'm going 90 to nothing. I mean, it's just like I got swim moves. I'm shooting gaps. I'm, making plays in the backfield. And these two guys are like, what in the hell is this kid doing? They kind of want you to play the game and brother-in-law a little bit so they can get through practice. And, they've been doing all the other stuff. And I hadn't really been doing all the fundamental work and technique and whatnot. So, I'm causing some problems, and they essentially had enough of it. And I think they went away from their assignments, didn't really care what was happening next, and just absolutely buried me, for the next 3 plays. And not just during the plays, but for a good 7, 10, 12 seconds after the play. And of course I'm getting up like, man, what's the deal? What's going on, man? This is BS, and they're like, hey, you need to chill out. You need to understand that that's not the way practice works right now. We'll get the full speed stuff later. Right now, we're just running through some plays, but you need to tone it down a little bit. That was one. And then probably the other would be, I get to Auburn, and I've never played a down of offensive line in my life. And, I go over playing center, learn how to snap the ball. And, we're running Oklahoma drill, and I get thrown into the mix. And it's 3 linemen, 2 D linemen, a linebacker, and a running back. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, I look up and there's a D lineman over the guard to my left, a D lineman over the guard to my right, and 55 is about 2 yards in front of me, and that's Dekeel Spike.
Oh man!
And I think he almost. I mean, it felt like he broke my jaw on that first play because I had a clean shot at him, but really and truly, he had a clean shot at me. And, he just, just pop, shed, make the tackle. And that was kind of when I realized we're dealing with a different force at this level of ball. It's not going to be like anything that I've gone against before, not going to be like anything I've had to deal with before. And you have those throughout your career. I mean, I remember, I can tell you the hardest I've ever been hit was 1999. We're at Georgia. And, I mean, we were fighting for our lives trying to get to a bowl game. I think they were a top 10, top 15 team. They had Marcus Stroud, Richard Seymour, Boss Bailey, Quincy Carter, and, you know, Ben Lear throws for 400-something yards. We run him out of there. But we're up, 30 points, 28 points late in the game. We're trying to run some clock. And we're running outside zone. I scoop with my backside guard. I kind of lift up the nose guard. And all of a sudden, Kendrell Bell, who would go on to be the defensive rookie of the year with the Steelers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a beeline right at me. No regard for where the play's going, where the football was, filling his gap. I mean, he put the crown of his helmet in my chin. And, I mean, I don't even know what happened. My ears hurt. I think my eyes began to water. I had snot coming out of my nose. I wasn't sure if I was even healthy. Like, I didn't know if my extremities were okay. It took about a good 5 seconds for me to, gather myself and think, okay, I can go another play here. But you have moments like that that you're like, wow, that was different. You play against Gerard Warren at Florida, who was the number 3 overall pick. That was my senior year in the SEC championship game. I faced him twice that year. He's a tilt nose where basically he's lined up in the A-gap between me and the guard, and, he's shooting gaps at 6'3", 320, quicker than a kid that's 260. And, he does some things to you every now and then. You're just thinking, that's not normal. That's not supposed to happen. So I think you have those throughout your career. There's not just one for any of us, but there's obviously a first one that you will always remember.
When you have that moment, let's just say the college moment when you were going against Takeo, I think you can go two ways, right? It could crush you to the idea of like, man, it really busts your confidence up. And I'm sure maybe to a certain degree it does that a little bit. It probably maybe dents your – you have moments where it dents your confidence. But is it also the catalyst for saying, okay, like, how do I deal with this? How do I get better?
Well, for a guy like Takeo Spikes, I don't really think it comes down – to getting better. It comes down to just you're going to have to learn some tactics to be able to deal with guys like that. No matter how good of a player – I became, I wasn't going to be able to deal with Marcus Stroud the same way I was most other guys. Willie Blade, Cornelius Griffin, I mentioned Gerard Warren. You weren't going to be able to manage those guys in the exact same way. You're going to probably have to get a little crafty when you face certain guys, but that's okay. I think it opened your eyes to sort of say to yourself, I'm going to have to rely on my technique and fundamentals first. Then we'll worry about, am I strong enough? Am I physical enough? Am I tough enough? Do I want it enough? But that technique and that fundamentals, if you trusted that first, you were going to give yourself a chance. Now, they still might make you look bad, but maybe they wouldn't make the play. Or maybe you'd still grade out with a plus, but you're not getting knocked on your rear, and the back of your jersey's not getting dirty, so to speak.
It's interesting. I brought in Aaron and you, and I'm going to talk to Jeff to sort of humble yourselves a little bit because I knew you guys wouldn't mind doing that. But let me flip it and give you this opportunity. Do you remember a game or even a few plays where you knew you were going up against a guy? And again, this is not to necessarily slight yourself or be immodest, but you were going up, maybe Warren or somebody like that, somebody who you knew was probably a better athlete than you and maybe went on to a bigger career than you, but you came away from that game going like, yeah, I got the best of him.
I felt that way after that SEC championship game, my senior year. I think there was something happened during the course of that game where Gerard Warren wasn't 100% anymore. I felt that way against Georgia my junior year. Now, we had the luxury of, having a big lead, and we didn't have to do a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think that helped us out a lot. They needed to play pretty aggressive. That was Richard Seymour and Marcus Stroud. Now, I mean, you compare careers post-college, and that's not even close. Those two guys went on to make tons of money and won Super Bowls and things like that. So those were the games. I mean, that Florida game down in Gainesville my senior year was one where I had been a little bit banged up, and I came back in the game late, and that was one where I said it not so much got the best of anybody, but you know, I realized that those were guys that were probably better players than me, and I had a lot of success, and so that built my confidence to say, okay, we can get back into this and we can get going again. So there was a couple different moments, but you know, that SEC championship game my senior year sticks out, and that Georgia game in Athens my junior year would stick out.
How beat up were you physically by the time your career was over? You ended up not going on to the NFL, and you had said, listen, you had just sort of summed up the situation and realized it was going to be hard for you. How beat up was your body by the time your 4 years at Auburn were up?
Yeah, it was bad because I tore my ACL when I was a freshman in high school. So you think about mechanically what that begins to change about your gait, you know, about just your body and anatomically how you operate. And I would go on to have, I mean, I had 4 more knee surgeries and I had 2 foot surgeries, all on the same side of my body, by the way. So, you know, I think anatomically I just wasn't correct and don't think I was going to get correct. And then, you know, we played Michigan in the Citrus Bowl. It was my last game. I mean, I went to Birmingham and Dr. Andrews scoped my knee the next day. Mm. So it was one of those deals where, I mean, I'm my career's over, but I'm starting to rehab right now. So there was some lingering stuff too. You know, you get the ankle stuff, you get an elbow deal, and it's just kind of like, you have to go prove that you're good enough first and foremost. But then you begin to think, am I even going to be able to ever get healthy enough to prove that I'm good enough to consistently be at that level? And that's when I think physically you just make the decision to say, you know what, I could chase this for a while, but it might be better quality of life if I just move on to my professional career and sort of start that.
Well, that worked out okay for you. Listen, I would be totally remiss because I know you're in between being, you know, Mr. Mom, which I'm sure you're doing as good a job as possible at these days, and taking care of your wife and taking care of the newborn. I also know you're watching some film. So we're going to hope, we're all hoping and praying and crossing fingers that we're going to have a college football season. I think we're going to get there. I think it's going to be a weird one. But I don't want to worry about that. What I want to worry about most of all is, give me the 2 or 3 best offensive lines you think going into this college football season, because I know you've already been doing the work on this.
Best offensive lines going into the year, I'd go Alabama, Ohio State, Tennessee, and I think there are a couple groups that are close to those. I think Wisconsin is close. I think Kentucky is one that everyone needs to keep their eyes on. They're very close. Kentucky's just flat out not as talented as some of the other ones that we'll talk about. Oklahoma is right there in that mix. I think Notre Dame is right there in that mix. I would probably, I mean, you could coin flip Ohio State, Notre Dame, Tennessee, Kentucky, like Oklahoma any given day. I like Tennessee a lot because I like Trey Smith a lot. And I think he's a guy that sort of would propel them over a couple of other groups. Not many teams have a guy like him. You know, Ohio State, you know, I think they have a solid center returning, and I think they have maybe the best guard in college football returning in Wyatt Davis. And he's another guy that I think would propel them, you know, up above some other groups. Like Alex Leatherwood at Alabama is one of those guys. And I think when you start talking about Leatherwood being the top 3, maybe even the number 2 tackle behind Penei Sewell, Deontay Brown's going to be a top 5 guard nationally. You know, Evan Neal showed that he can be, he's a gigantic human being and played some pretty good ball last year. He had some flaws, but he was a freshman. Landon Dickerson played at Florida State and started every game at Alabama last year. He's got experience. The Dalcourt kid's going to be able to play some center for him, so they have options. Neil Okior is a guy that's played a little bit, could maybe step in. You know, Alabama has a little more depth than those other teams that I mentioned. You know, Tennessee, I think Wanya Morris has a bright future at tackle. Obviously, Brandon Kennedy's played a ton of football, started his career at Alabama, started last year at Tennessee. He'll bring a bunch of experience. If they get Cade Mays eligible from Georgia, all of a sudden you might have the best guard tandem in the nation between he and Trey Smith. So I don't think Tennessee has the depth. I don't think Ohio State has the depth that an Alabama does right now, just with that particular group. You know, I think we would all like to say that Oregon's in that mix. They do have the best individual offensive lineman in Penei Sewell, but they just, you know, losing Throckmorton and those guys, it's just Shane Lemieux. It's too much. They lost too much to be considered on the level of that group. So, you know, I think it's Alabama, probably Ohio State, and then maybe the next tier would be Tennessee, Notre Dame, Oklahoma, Wisconsin, and Kentucky deserves to be in that group as well. Not a lot of people are going to talk about Kentucky, but they do deserve to be mentioned with that group. Drake Jackson is right there behind Creed Humphrey as maybe the best center in college football. You got Darian Kennard, Landon Young back at tackle. So Luke Fortner played a lot of guard for him last year. He's going to be back. They lose Stenberg, who was there. He was sort of their enforcer, to use a hockey term, but they're going to be nasty, and they got a lot more skill behind them than people think. You know, people think, oh well, Lynn Bowden's gone, they can't operate the same way. Terry Wilson's been a starting quarterback before, and all of a sudden you got AJ Rose, you got Smoke Monday, you got Christopher Rodriguez, who can line up in the backfield and do different things. So that 80 grand offense might be really fun to watch this year in Lexington.
Here's a good thing about Cole, man. All you need is to wind him up a little bit when it comes to football, and you get a lot of good information out of him. Cole, man, that was awesome. I appreciate you telling me some of your personal stories. I appreciate that first preview of offensive lines and a little taste of the season, because I know we're going to get there. It's going to be a weird one, but I know we're going to get there. And again, I really appreciate you sharing those stories when you were humbled a little bit, because I know you were the type of guy who doesn't necessarily mind that.
Well, we could probably do it for every game that I played in at some point, but you know, we're just going to keep it short today.
Cole Kublik, you can find him on SEC Network, you can find him on ESPN a bunch, and you can find him on WJOX FM out of Birmingham on Three Man Front in the middays. Cole, thanks so much for doing this today.
Thanks, Ralph. Enjoyed it, man.
This podcast is presented by Regions Bank. You're chasing your goals, and it's up to you how you want to get there. Let Regions Bank coach you with financial tips that fit your everyday grind. Visit regions.com/next-step to learn more. Regions, member FDIC.
My final guest here on this very special edition of the AP Top 25 College Football Podcast is the third offensive lineman of the group, not necessarily last, but certainly not least, Jeff Schwartz. You can hear him on Sirius XM now. You can follow him at Jeff Schwartz on Twitter. He drops a ton of football knowledge. He is a great listener and a great follow. He also was a really good offensive lineman at Oregon and had a long NFL career. Jeff, thanks very much for joining me today.
Yeah, I'm used to being last. I mean, I'm an offensive lineman. I was a seventh-round draft pick. I'm used to it. It's okay. You have to apologize to me for that.
Well, Jeff, you know, seventh-round draft pick, but you ended up making a lot of it, again, with a really good NFL career. So now you were a star athlete in high school, a star athlete in college, and you played in the NFL for a long time. But at some points, I'm sure you had moments where you were humbled, and that's what this show is about. So again, you can pick from any of those, you can go multiple, but I'm kind of wondering, share with me some of your welcome to the big time moments.
Yeah, it's a great question. I get asked this a lot, obviously. No, I don't really have many, I guess, from high school to college. I mean, the only thing is, you know, everything's just a little faster in college. I do remember my first game I ever played. I played as a true freshman. Man, I wish they had the true freshman redshirt rule. I believe the freshman redshirt rule back when I played, because I only played 4 games, 80 snaps my freshman year. I would have loved to get that year back like we have now, but we were at Washington State. And, you know, I don't know if people know this, but position groups typically sit on certain, you know, certain parts of the sideline. So, and it really doesn't actually change. I mean, you might move ebb and flow, but the offensive line where we were sitting was at the far end of the field compared to where we were. The offense was in the red zone in the other part of the field. So I'm just standing there waiting for, you know, just like I normally am. And my coach goes, Schwartz, you're in. And I go, okay. So I run in the game, my first time ever in the game, at Washington State. The first play, they call the play, they snap the ball, it was a screen. I didn't even get out of my stance. Like, the guy went by me so fast, I was just stunned with the speed. The second play was sort of the same thing. I was like, oh, man, I'm not going to be able to do this. And then by the third play, we score a touchdown. I was pretty much sort of used to it, and then get into the speed. But really where my welcome to the NFL moment happened, I believe it was actually my third year in the NFL. So the difference, the main difference between the way I explain it, between the NFL and between college football, is that obviously in the NFL, everyone's in the NFL, right? And out west in the Pac-12, you might face two guys a year that are NFL guys. I mean, if you look at last season, like Penei Sewell, for example, Oregon's left tackle, he faced Bradley and I. That was it in the Pac-12 conference of guys that are going to be in the NFL. Now, he faced two guys in the Auburn game and the Rose Bowl, but you just don't face a lot of pro guys. In the NFL, they're all pros. And you have to play hard each and every week. In college, you can skate by 85, 90%, some games, 75%, because the guy you're playing with is just not good. And so I get to the NFL. This would have been like my fifth start. I started three times in 2009. This is 2010 now. I think it was my second start of the year that year. I'm playing Tampa Bay. I'm playing right tackle. And I'm playing against nobody. It's like undrafted free agents, seventh round draft pick. And all week, the older guys were like, Schwartz, man, you have it easy this week. You know, you're playing scrubs. The other side was, I think they had a really good defensive end, left tackle. So, they're just like, Schwartz, you have it easy this week. And I kind of bought into it. I was like, man, it's just easy this week, right? Like, everyone's telling me it's easy, it's going to be easy. And then I allowed one full sack, two half sacks. I had, three, four pressures and three penalties. Like, it was the worst game of my career. And that was a reminder to me to never, ever go easy on an opponent. That each and every week in the NFL, the guy across you, whether it's an undrafted guy, first-round draft pick, can beat you any single time. And that is what I took away from kind of my humbling moment.
So it wasn't even necessarily like a big star player. It was just an avalanche of a game where just nothing went right.
Correct. It was brutal.
So
it was bad.
That's interesting that it took that long though. So because you were a seventh round draft, you were a seventh round draft pick. Did you?
Yeah.
But you felt like. Let me ask you something. As a seventh-round draft pick, did you go in there thinking, like, what's your confidence level as a seventh-round draft pick going into an NFL training camp?
Well, I mean, I don't really remember. I just know that I had to learn how to play from a three-point stance because, that was what we were doing in the NFL back then. I was in college for 3 years in a spread offense. But, I mean, there's no pressure on a seventh-round draft pick. I mean, there's pressure to make the team, of course, but you're going against threes. Like, you're going against guys that might not make the team either. I don't really remember a moment when I was a rookie, like, wow, I'm going against someone that I shouldn't be, or this is my learning moment. Mm-hmm. The following year, I started week 15, my first start, my second year, against the Vikings. We played, it was Ray Edwards, was the DN. I was with Jared Owls on the other side. The Williams brothers were inside, Kevin and Pat, a really good duo of defensive tackle.
Yeah, that was a hell of a defensive line.
It was Sunday night football, too. We were 5-8, I think. That was the year they went to the NFC Championship game against the Saints. And I played fine. I didn't really have a moment. The following week, we went up to New York, and we rushed for like 300 yards. And the last game ever in the Meadowlands, we won 41-9. And then in week 17 that year, we played the Saints, who won the Super Bowl that year. They weren't playing anybody. It was a week 17. Mark Brunell started for them. So I didn't really have any of those moments as a young player that wasn't playing games. I feel like you get most of those moments in games. I mean, there are young players that get them in practice when they're first-round picks. They're playing against Jordan Gross, who played for a long time in the NFL out of Utah. He told me that the first pass rush rep he ever had, and he was a ninth pick overall for the Panthers, was against Julius Peppers. Peppers ran him over. Like, I didn't play Julius Peppers. I did on scout team, but I didn't play him in practice. Like, I never got like that welcome to the NFL moment from an NFL player. The guys I went against were all guys that didn't really make the team.
Right. Coming into the league the way you did, at what point in your career did you show up to training camp thinking like, I'm good. I know I have to work hard to make the team, but it's not just about making the team. It's about now I got to try to become a starter here. Now I got to try to gain a little more playing time. When did that mindset maybe shift for you?
Well, I entered 2010 with Jeff Otaw being hurt, and so I knew I was going to play.
Mm-hmm.
2011, we had a new coaching staff, so I kind of entered like, okay, I got to win this job, which obviously was important. I don't remember really fighting for a position until I got to the Vikings in 2012, where I knew that you know, I was kind of trying to restart my career. I've been hurt in Carolina, and I was battling against Brandon Fusco. I knew that I had a battle at hand. I entered camp with the idea of winning a job. I knew that it was a battle between me and him. Entering 2013, I go to the Chiefs, and I signed a backup deal. I had no, even though I was sort of with the ones a little bit early in camp, I knew that I really wasn't. Like, I wasn't going to be with the ones. So I didn't enter camp with the idea of, like, I'm going to try to win a starting position. There wasn't one to win. And that's one thing about this that is interesting about your rosters in the NFL is, you know, people think there's a lot of competition, and there really isn't. You know, just based off draft slot and salary compensation, there's only like six spots available when you enter training camp. And most of those, I think, are already penciled in out of those six spots of who they think is going to win. Now, it will change. You know, one guy will step up, one guy won't. Got injuries, obviously, will change the depth chart, but it's far less than you think. And I think that is something that people don't really realize. So it wasn't really until my fifth or sixth year when I really felt like I was fighting to start. Because like I said, when I was young, in 2009, I knew I wasn't going to start, and I didn't until the end of the season, someone got hurt. And then 2010, like I said, I was starting from day one because Otal was hurt, and I knew he was going to be out a while. So he never played that year. I never really felt like I was fighting for a position then either.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'd be remiss to not ask you one more thing before I let you go here, because you played on one of the great what-if teams, really, in recent college football history. And maybe – I'm sorry, Jeff. I know it's a little painful, but I got to take you through it because it's a college football podcast, and that is 2007 Oregon with Dennis Dixon. In some ways, I hate to make you relive it, but it was an amazing team. As that season went along, what was the feeling on that team? Did you guys think, listen, we're winning a national championship, we're playing for a national championship, we're doing big things? And what was it like when Dennis went down?
Well, we played USC that year, 37, and, you know, the USC was, you know, the class of the conference for years, and we didn't beat them in 05, we could beat them in 06. And we finally beat them that year, and I think it was like we were ninth and we were 11th, or I forget what. We'll probably look it up as we talk about what, you know, where we were ranked. I mean, we were ranked pretty high, and they were ranked pretty high too. And we beat them at home, and that felt like we kind of got over the hurdle. Like, okay, we beat USC, and now we're kind of in the clear. And then once we beat Arizona State, who was, I believe, was ranked sixth in the country at that point, with Rudy Carpenter as quarterback, we beat him at home, and Dennis did get hurt late in that game. I mean, you look at the last three games, it was at Arizona, and they weren't a bowl team, and it was at UCLA, and they were bad, and Oregon State wasn't any good either. But we were looking at, we were two in the nation, and we had three winnable games. I mean, there was no doubt, we were 10-point favorites on the road to Arizona. We would have been 10-point favorites at UCLA, and we would have been, 14-point favorites at Oregon State at home in the Civil War, and we would have been in the title game. And then Dennis gets hurt, and obviously everything changes. So some interesting stuff about how that went down. So I actually lockered next to Dennis that season. And there were four of us lockering in one area. And unfortunately, three of the four tore their ACLs. That's how our season went. It wasn't just Dennis hurt, by the way. It was like our middle linebacker was out for the year. Two wide receivers were out for the year. Running back was out for the year. Like, it was everyone, our entire squad was hurt. Obviously, we lost, ended up losing four quarterbacks that season. So, Dennis gets hurt in Arizona State, and they say nothing about it. I walk up next to him. He said nothing. Not like, you know, hey, I can't play. But I do remember one distinct change. I remember this because I screwed up in the game. That's why I remember, and I don't make many mental mistakes. So the entire week we prepared for Arizona, I remember thinking to myself, we don't have a lot of quarterback runs in. So, you know, that was 2007, Chip Kelly's first year, the zone read. And I know other, you know, Rich Rod had been running it for a little bit of time, but really it kind of became in vogue that year with Chip Kelly. And it was a big part of our offense, was Dennis Dixon running the football. And every run that we put in that week for Arizona all had a tight end on the backside, which signals you're just handing the ball off. Mm-hmm. All of them. And even though we practiced all season, all zone reads, now we put a tight end and we're just handing the ball off. And in hindsight, it was, to protect Dennis. Because with an ACL, guys, you can move forward and back okay. It's the lateral movement that kills you. And so he can move. He can drop in the pocket. He could plant and throw. He could run forward straight ahead, but they're trying to limit the opportunities for him to run the ball. So then we play Arizona on – it was a night game. In
Thursday night, right?
And I actually screwed up. So we called a inside zone instead of a zone read, two different assignments for the backside tackle where I was. And I blocked it like we had done all season. I had a certain look. I'm like, okay, well, here's the look. And so I blocked out on the edge defender, and that means the guy Dennis was reading, which he wasn't actually reading anybody, was crashing inside. And Dennis just instinctively pulled the ball like he did all season, and he scored that touchdown. If you remember that game, he ran a touchdown on torn ACL.
Yeah.
He just ran in a straight line. So I screwed up. Dennis naturally, I guess, just treated it like it was the other run and kept the ball himself, which was not called, and scored a touchdown. And so then obviously could turn that game. And you know what's crazy about that game, too, is I remember talking to a couple of Arizona defenders at the East-West Shrine game and things like that, and they said, Dennis goes out, we're up 8-0, and Dennis is out, we're driving down the field with Brady Leaf in the game, and we throw a slant, and our guy's in the end zone, it hits his chest, bounces up, and they pick the ball off. We would have been up 15-0. I mean, I think if we go up there I think we win the game. But the ball is picked off, and then it's taken back, and then we lose Arizona, and then we get shut out by UCLA. I mean, that's how UCLA was so bad. We were down 9-0 in the fourth quarter because we lost. Brady Leaf broke his foot in that game, and now we're down three quarterbacks because our second string actually had torn his ACL a couple weeks beforehand in practice. Now we're down to a redshirt freshman, walk on at quarterback, and it was so bad, man. We played our bowl game with our fifth-string quarterback. How many teams could do that? We scored 56 points with our fifth-string quarterback.
Well,
pretty incredible.
I'm sorry to bring up some of those bad memories. I am glad that you remind, because we forget that Dixon was not hurt in the Arizona game. The Arizona game was the final straw, but he was actually injured the week before.
Yes.
And then
it's sort of like the Carson Wentz injury. He was like diving forward, kind of hit on the side, and that was the end of it.
Gosh. Hey, man, Jeff Schwartz, you can hear him on SiriusXM. You can follow him on Twitter at Jeff Schwartz. He was a great offensive lineman for Oregon. He played a long NFL career. Appreciate you sharing the stories about that Oregon team and also those stories about how you got humbled a little bit in the NFL.
You're welcome, buddy.
And now, since this isn't a normal show and this has been nothing like a normal offseason, we'll skip the three and out this week and give you a little preview of what's to come as we head toward the season. Fingers crossed. We're about to the point when I would start previewing the season conference by conference. The plan right now is to plow ahead on that. Starting the week of July 13th, we'll start previewing at least one Power 5 conference per week. I'll also do a show previewing the Group of 5. Sorry, we're going to lump them all together. And we'll do a Notre Dame preview segment as well sometime in the month leading up to the season. So that's the plan. But I also expect several twists and turns over the next couple of months as we try to get to the football season while a pandemic rages on. We'll also do our best here to stay on top of the news, and that might cause me to change some plans and to tweak some podcast schedules. If all goes well, there will be a new AP Top 25 podcast in your feed by Tuesday afternoon every week. And I anticipate a couple of bonus episodes along the way. The AP Preseason Top 25 is scheduled to be published Monday, August 17th. Let's hope for the best, folks. Wear a mask, stay away from crowds as best you can, and talk to you in a couple of weeks. I'd like to thank my producer, Warren Levinson, for making me sound good. You can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Westwood One Podcast. Please subscribe so you do not miss an episode. I'm Ralph Russo, the college football writer for the Associated Press. Thanks for listening, and come back for more of the AP Top 25 College Football Podcast.
This podcast is presented by Regions Bank. You're chasing your goals, and it's up to you how you want to get there. Let Regions Bank coach you with financial tips that fit your everyday grind. Visit regions.com/next-step to learn more. Regions, member FDIC.